Hello, podcast listeners. This episode you're about to listen to is from the 2022 Be More Digital Conference. If you like what you hear, why not join us at the 2023 conference? It is going to be held on the 9th of March 2023 at the Novotel London West Hotel. We would just love to see you there. Visit charitydigital.org.uk for more information on all things digital. Enjoy.
So, for those that don't know me, I am Jen. I'm a digital and agile consultant. I've worked in the charity sector for 15 years, worked in charities at the start of my career, and then for the last 8 years, I have been freelance. I run an organisation called Feel Good, Do Good, which is all about making organisations happier and doing work better, primarily through digital. I'm also a self-confessed productivity and happiness geek, hence the feel good. And for those of you that came to my session this morning or at lunchtime, I was sharing some tips on what you can do in 25 minutes a day. So we've tried to make this as practical as possible. So there's kind of, again, kind of actionable like things you can do and take away to your organizations. I'm also a travel blogger and a co-working space owner. I do lots of things.
She does a lot of things. I'm Catherine. I have also mainly worked in the charity sector. I have a background in kind of capacity building, product management, and impact measurement, which some of you might have heard me talk about earlier. I am also a massive agile nerd, product nerd, whatever you want to call them, and also a massive board game geek, if anyone is interested. But yes, I'm very much interested in talking about this, lots of tools. I've come from a small charity background, and I also do a lot of campaigning outside of work, which is all very much volunteer-led. So really interested to share as much as we can.
So I'm going to start by talking a bit about Agile. So what is Agile? Lots of people bandy the word Agile around all the time, and often if I'm searching stuff about Agile, it's kind of, oh, you know, we're Agile, we're flexible. There's a session next door, I think, about hybrid working, so if you think Agile is about flexible working, you better go next door. So we're talking about Agile, which has been traditionally used for kind of software development, but I'm a big believer that Agile can be used for everything. MPC, Catherine, is one of my clients, and I work, though Catherine is all about digital, I work with another team in MPC who are not about digital, and we're using a lot of these agile methods in those projects as well, so it doesn't have to just be for agile. But ultimately, agile is a mindset. When people think about agile, you might think about Scrum. We're going to talk a little bit about those things, so things like morning stand-ups you might have heard of, where the team get together for 10, 15 minutes every morning. You say, what did you do yesterday? What are you doing today? Are there any blockers? Things like sprints, which we're going to talk about in a moment. That is part of Agile, but ultimately it's a mindset. It's about openness. It's about collaboration. It's about listening to your customers, listening to your users, internal and external. And that is really what Agile is about. So this here is the Agile manifesto. I'm not going to go into detail on all of those things. But ultimately, while there's value with the things on the right, we value the things on the left more. So it's about responding to change. I think every organization has automatically become more agile in the pandemic because we've had to be. We've had these great plans, but things change all the time. It doesn't mean there's no plans in agile. It just means that you're open to change and being flexible. Listen to your customers and make decisions based on what they're saying. So, tip number one is, who's heard of a Kanban board? Yeah, cool. So this is kind of a key tool that's used in Agile. And again, I'm a big believer that this can be for kind of not just digital. So basically in a Kanban board, you can choose how often you update it, but generally it's every 2 to 4 weeks when you'd have a kind of sprint planning session. So this is where you decide kind of where you are in the project, what are the next things that we have to be doing in the next 2 weeks, and that goes in the to-do column. You'll, you know, decide kind of who might be doing what, you make sure that that amount is achievable in the time that you have, and then you kind of set to work as a team. It's decided collaboratively. These are some of the agile values on the right here. But ultimately, as a team, it's a bit less hierarchical than, well, it's a lot less hierarchical if you're being truly agile than kind of a typical organization might be. It's not your manager saying, you need to do this now. It's the team together collaborating, listening to the users, listening to each other, and deciding what is it that we need to be doing next? What are the priorities that we need to put forward? So it's about being open. Sometimes people see this a bit scary. It's kind of like, well, isn't that a bit micromanagement-y if you're literally putting everything you're doing in a board that everyone shares and everyone can see? But that's not the point of it at all. It's about really being able to see, because how many of you sometimes think, what have they actually been doing this week? They've probably been working really hard on something that might actually be really connected to what you're doing, but you haven't really talked about it. So this way, you really get to see what everyone's doing. I did this with a council in the Lake District, and started with the digital team, but the rest of the team started to use it. So the HR team were using it, the legal team were using it. It was back in the day when everyone went into the office. So there was a big Kanban board on the wall in the office so people could actually see things moving across. They really saw that kind of like commitment of the team and kind of really seeing kind of how people are moving things forward. The other major benefit is around doing things in 2-week sprints is you don't have a massive project plan. It's about trying stuff, then doing a bit of user testing and moving forward dependent on what comes back from that user research or user testing. This is the diagram that we saw in the last session for anyone that was there. It's a very popular diagram. Everyone loves it. I see it everywhere, and here it is in our presentation. We heard about this, for those of you that were in the opening plenary, about failing fast, learning fast, and improving fast. This is what Agile is about, not being afraid to fail. And I think as a small organization, you really have the opportunity to kind of try things out. And it doesn't have to be some massive trial. Do something for a week, do something for a fortnight. Test a certain type of Facebook post. Test a bit of paid advertising and see what works. Learn from it. If it doesn't work, you've only done it for a week, so it's okay. It's not such a major loss as committing to a massive project that takes 6 months or something. So take risks and learn from your mistakes. This Catherine introduced me to the other day, Killed by Google. And this is kind of, if you want to feel good as a small organization, go onto this website and there's basically a massive scrolling list of all the things that Google has failed at. There's a lot of them. So go on there and see just all, some of them you'll recognize. What was the networking Google circle? What was that called? What was that? What was it? Plus, Google Plus, that was it. Google, see, I can't even remember what it was. And they thought this was the big next Facebook. So, you know, it's okay to fail at things. You can still make a massive success of lots of other things.
And there's an immense amount of learning from those examples as well, just to go and look at and browse.
Yeah, definitely. Learn. You can also learn from the bigger organizations too. Also part of Agile is regular reviews and retros. So this is kind of like, so a review is where you're reviewing the work. A retro is where you're kind of looking at how you can work better as a team. So it's all about the people. So it's like, what are we doing as a team? How can we collaborate better? How can we communicate better? Are the sprints working fortnightly? Should we be catching up daily for the stand-up? Should we be doing it every other day? What is working for you? And making sure you have those regular retros can really help the team move forward. And then the regular reviews to look at, share openly with the wider organization what you've been doing in the last sprint. You know, again, the council that I worked at was a small council in the Lake District. The chief exec used to sometimes come to our reviews. They were in an open room. Anyone could come to the session. It was a 45-minute session. The team would share what they'd done. People can comment, reflect, ask questions. And often, because the chief exec and the directors would come, there'd be things that would be sticking points for senior leadership. And straight away, he'd be like, right, well, I'm going to send an email and unblock that. I'm going to do that straight away. So that openness can really kind of help move things forward. And again, much easier in a smaller organization. So a simple practice, what worked well, what didn't go well, and what have I learned? You could do that every 2 weeks in a retro, every 2 weeks, 3 weeks in a review, and see from that, what have you learned? So that's the kind of what are we going to do differently. So I've talked about putting the customer first. User research, user testing, it can all be quite scary and seem like this massive task, but it can just be really simple things. I'm a big fan of user research. So this is kind of my favorite type of user research is kind of one-on-one user interviews, okay? They only have to take kind of 10, 15, 20 minutes, come up with maybe like 5 to 7 questions about a particular thing that you want to know about, and just have this kind of one-on-one phone call, Zoom call, in person. And the information you can gather from that can be so much more valuable than the information that you can gather from a survey. Surveys have their place, 100%, but those one-on-one conversations, it's about being flexible in that interview. You'll have some key questions, but you might add a bit of a follow-up question depending on what they said. And there's some research that shows that return on investment drops after the first 5 interviews a lot of the time, because a lot of us are quite similar. And if you're looking at quite a specific group and a specific topic, you'll find that a lot of those things start to come up again. I'm working with a charity at the moment, and we've just been doing some user research with their newsletter subscribers, and we've done 8 user interviews, and the insights have just been incredible. Like, really, really interesting stuff about kind of the importance of stories, about why people donate, about how they came to sign up to the newsletter. Really useful things that can be used to improve the newsletter and how we get people to sign up going forward. But these are just a kind of few tips on how you might do a user interview. So using open questions as often as possible so they don't just give a yes or no answer. Introducing yourself, making them feel comfortable, maybe having a bit of a script, like at the start, kind of explaining why you're doing it, why they're there, but being okay to kind of go off a bit, go off on a bit of a tangent. You can also, if you want, give a bit of an incentive. It can sometimes help. Sometimes it can hinder. It depends on who you're asking as to you might get the wrong people coming forward. But often, generally, it's good to pay for people's time. And also, you're more likely to get people that are willing to give their time up. So, over to you, Catherine.
Yeah, I thought I'd just give a really concrete example of how we have used that in MPC. So I've worked with Jen. When I first came into my role, there was a bit of an assumption that it's a jargon term, but my organization do a lot on theory of change, and they thought, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we had a jazzy piece of software that made it look really good and everyone could just log in and make it themselves without MPC having to be a consultant. That was just an idea that someone banded around and people thought was cool. So Jen and I, actually, we were like, we should probably test that. Don't know if anyone actually wants that. So we went and spoke to a bunch of organizations, sort of small and large. Had about 8 conversations initially, started to theorize, maybe there's more to this, and actually the process is quite hard, and we should probably dig into that a little bit. So we then did about sort of 4 or 5 others, I think it was, off the top of my head, and actually found that nobody wanted a theory of change builder on a jazzy piece of software. Most people found the process okay, some of the language wasn't the best, but actually what people really struggled with was what to do with it at the end. They've got this nice diagram, they've got this narrative, they've got this agreement, but they have absolutely no idea how to embed that in their organization, how to make it part of their evaluation, and all of that kind of next stuff was just really hard. So we actually just completely changed what we're doing. Rather than carrying on down our little funnel and saying, yes, everyone will love this, we completely changed. We went to start actually thinking about, okay, if we did do something on embedding it in your organization, what could that look like? And tested lots of ideas, had a few workshops which were a little bit longer, but took no more than sort of 2 hours in all for me to do. I sort of made some PowerPoint slides, took people through a potential process that wasn't branded, it wasn't all fancy, it was just an idea. Took people through, it sounded kind of good. We've now actually I've actually developed something, and it is hopefully, and it's continued to be tested, and it's hopefully launching soon. So through using something as simple as, 12 conversations in all, we've actually completely changed what we were doing, completely changed the direction that we're going, and really invested in something that, fingers crossed, is going to be much more useful to people. So that's just a really concrete example of where if we'd have just carried on and not spent that sort of 2 days of time, we would have probably really put our foot in it and not done something useful for the sector. But also just to say that a lot of the, I use Agile in my job, so I am a one-band team, and I do a lot with other organizations and teams and with Jen. So even if you're a one-band team, you can do this, just find someone else. We have lots of buddies, we call them, or Agile buddies in MPC, who have nothing to do with each other, they're not on the same project, you still can do this. You just have your daily stand-ups, you have your retros and things, and you think about your work, and you get, actually it's quite interesting to get an input from someone who's not in your project as well. But I also do them on a project basis. It means that I can do multiple projects. I have about 5 at the moment of different sort of software and things in different sort of places. It means that I can have multiple projects, multiple collaborations, and ideally multiple outcomes for the sector. And also things just to build on what Jen was saying, things like being able to tell stakeholders that you have a review meeting where they are welcome to come and ask you questions can save you so much time, because you're giving them a space where they can come and they can ask you anything about the project rather than 10 emails in your week saying, have you thought about this? Which you inevitably have. Have you done this? What's the progress in this? And if you can just funnel people into one meeting and have that as an open door conversation, you can save yourself so much time. And I also really personally benefit from the retros that I do with Jen. For me, I find working from home quite hard. I'm a one-person team, and even when I am working with external people and people in my organization, working from home is hard. And actually, it's really motivating to get to have that conversation, to have that feedback, both from other people, but from yourself as well, every 2 weeks to sort of say, how are things going? What am I finding really hard? And even just scheduling time. At the start, I was saying, I'll use the research. Yeah, it'll take me 10 minutes to get loads of people in. And actually, it does take a little bit longer sometimes, or it takes less time. I'm really trying to understand how you work and how the tasks work. But having doing it every 2 weeks means you just get so much more out of it.
Yeah. Also, with just to add with Catherine's review meetings, I thought that was the edge there and I was about to fall off. the funder also gets invited. So it's also a chance for the funder to kind of see that progression and see things moving forward. So if it is a funded project that you're working on, it can again be a great way because they want to see the progress, and it saves you from again having to write massive boring reports that no one's probably going to read, which is one of the things around Agile is kind of less documentation. It's not about no documentation, but it's about we're moving so fast, we don't have time to write reports all the time. Come to a quick session, we've kind of learned this and now we're doing something different, and we've learned this and we're doing something different. It's that openness with kind of everyone involved is really beneficial.
And it can definitely get you out of groupthink as well. There's nothing like coming into a meeting and then asking you a really awkward question, you'd be like, didn't think about that. And I could have gone off for months and not thought about that, but someone else brought in a different perspective, and you now have to account for that, or not, up to you.
So we just wanted to share a few kind of bits of software and things that we think can help with some of these ideas. So the first one, does anyone in here use Trello? Yes, excellent. So it is free, largely. What you need to pay for, you can do a lot with the free version that you don't really need to pay for it. There are definitely benefits, but there's so much you can do with the free. So looking at that Kanban board, it's a really great way to kind of see that moving forward. MPC's innovation team also have one to share ideas. They've got if you've got an idea, just put it in the ideas column, add a new ticket. If things are moving forward, you can move it through to things we're working on now as a wider team. And again, you can give lots of people access to this Trello. So again, it's open. People can literally see what you're working on all the time. I again also use it personally for my work. I find it really useful. I do my own sprint planning weekly. Some people do it fortnightly. Every Sunday night, I like working on a Sunday. That's just me. And I do it planning for the week ahead. Lots of people do it on a Friday afternoon. It's a really nice last minute thing. Do it for an hour or so on a Friday afternoon, kind of plan what it is you're doing next week, or as a team get together and plan it.
I even, I probably shouldn't admit this, have one for my personal life. I juggle a lot of hats with campaigns, work, other things, and I sometimes use a Trello board.
Yeah, yeah. I was showing my friend the other day and she got very excited and has created a personal Trello board. Canva, I talked about this in the last session, just a really useful tool to use if you're not already on it. It's free for charities. Make sure you sign it. It's free, a lot of it's free anyway, but there is the paid version is free for charities. This presentation is made on Canva. You can do kind of social media posts, you can do posters. Graphic designers hate it because it makes everyone a graphic designer instantly. There's loads of like lovely designs and things you can use. You can add your own imagery, branding, etc. Just a couple of quick ones, kind of more towards the kind of digital marketing side, really, in terms of hacks. Make sure you're on Wikipedia. Lots of charities aren't, and like it's often what appears as like the right-hand thing on Google. So get yourself on there. It's relatively easy to set one up, but you're going to have that information straight away if someone's Googling your organisation. All the big charities are on there, but smaller ones you may well not be. Another trick, again, super simple, make sure you're on Google Maps. Even if your office isn't necessarily like one that people go to, it's again things that come up in search, it's things that people search for, especially if you're a regional organisation. And all that stuff helps with kind of SEO. And if you're on Google Maps, if you're on Wikipedia, if you're... I could talk for a long time about SEO. But all those things are little bits that help you appear higher in search for everything else in Google. So it just helps your website kind of get up there. It helps your blog posts get up there. So just make sure just you've got some of those simple things in place.
Cool. So this one I was going to talk about. So often you might people might want to mock up a website or any kind of prototype that you've got, you can actually use. You don't need your Figma, your Adobe, all of the big fancy things that often cost a lot of money. You can actually use things like PowerPoint. But you can mock it up both aesthetically, but also it can click through to different pages, so you can actually test it as if it were a website. Obviously, lots of you probably already have a website, but if you want something new, or you really want to test an idea with someone, or test the way that someone interacts with something, this can be a really quick and easy way, and it's obviously free. If you have Microsoft. Another one was tools for good. So if you want to make a case for something or are unsure what sort of software is right for you, this is a whole bank, again linked, which basically lists lots of people's digital tools and tells you what software they've used. So you can then go in and have an understanding. So this one only uses one thing, Squarespace, but there are lots where they have like multiple pieces of software. So they might use something called Zapier, which is a thing that connects different pieces of software. But it just is a really good example of being like, oh, these guys use that, and that was really helpful for them, and this looks really great, and maybe I could take that to my board or whoever I need to get investment from. But it's just a great way of also working out if anyone's already done what you want to do, because it might be better to partner with them, or you can learn from what they've done if you've got a different audience, for example. But yeah, there's like 300 something on there, so it's a really good resource, and it's a lot of them are no-code tools. I don't know if that's a word that people know, but that is essentially software where you do not have to code. It will do the coding for you. You can do lots of dragging and dropping, and it will do all the stuff behind the scenes for you. I use it quite a lot in my job because I'm not a developer and do not plan to be one. But yeah, there's lots of options on there which can give you a really tangible for something like Airtable might have been bandied around. There's lots of good examples of people that use that in practice, and you can see what they've done. This one came up in my last session, but Hotjar. So Hotjar is a really good resource on top of your sort of standard analytics for your website. So they have a free or partially free version for charities, which again is linked. And it's really good for doing things such as if you know lots of people are coming to your website, but they're to a particular page, but they're only spending, I don't know, 30 seconds and they're dropping off, or like everyone's bouncing off straight away. It's a really good way to understand what people are actually doing on that page without having to have people in the room. So there's lots of things like this very colourful map is looking at how far people scroll down a page, and it'll tell you the sort of percentage of people that get to a certain point, so you can really start to understand, oh, nobody is going beyond this point, let's go and have a conversation about why that is. They also have click-throughs, where they show where most people click, and you can also do like pop-up surveys and things where you could say, after 30 seconds of this person being on this site, we'll ask them how they're finding it, or did they find what they wanted, or something like that. So there's lots of really useful ways to kind of build on something like Google Analytics or Plausible to sort of start to build up that picture. And I find it a great starting point for trying to understand if something's not quite going the way that I thought it was. Let's go and have a look at this first, so I start to build up a picture, and then I'll go and have a conversation with someone because I've got a bit of more of a specific idea what's going wrong or what I might need to change.
Another way, if you weren't in the last session, is to, similar to the user research, user interviews, you can do user testing where you sit down next to someone or get someone to share their screen on Zoom and ask them to do something on your website. So for example, like sign up to our newsletter and watch them and see what they do and see how long it takes them to do it or find a certain piece of information. And if they're like, I can't find it, then that's telling you that your website homepage or wherever they started from is not great. And you should probably make that task easier if it's something that they should, that you want them to be doing. So again, like you could just test it with kind of five people, 5-10 minutes. Please, can you try and find this, or please can you, how would you go about donating, or how would you go about finding out about a certain service? And that can be another really great way to.
Yeah, and I've done that really quickly. So say you're already holding an event, and you know there's a bunch of people and not everyone wants to come to this session, they might be sort of milling around outside, giving people, like trying to use it where you've already got something going on. I take people to the side, say, hey, do you mind if I spend 5-10 minutes doing this, testing something with you? You can plop down the laptop or iPad or whatever it is and do something like that, or you can print out a whole screen on your web page. If you go on developer tools in your browser, you can print the entire web page and you can have it there for them to look at, and you can sort of do things like the 5-second test where you flash up the page, they look at it for 5 seconds, and then you ask them what they noticed, like you hide it, and then you ask them what they noticed. And that's a really good indication of, yeah, what are the things that are most important to people or are sticking out to people that you might not have realized. These, I won't go through all of them, but to help you with Canva and any of your other assets, icons, illustrations, things like that are really great. So this is a long list. They're all linked through and they're all free. And yeah, feel free to use them. Another few things that were mentioned today, there's a, for like stock images, often they're not very diverse, so there's a specific stock image site called Nappy, spelled as you think it would be, which is specifically designed to have photos for people of all ranges, so absolutely great resource, and it's all free. And these are accessibility testers. So often we might believe that our sites or our products are accessible, but these are tools that will help you to test that. So one that will test a screen reader, one that will sort of do the color contrast to make sure that it's big enough for individuals to see, and yeah, sort of plugins. And there's even a one page kind of checklist that you can just sort of rattle down and make sure that you are compliant so that everyone is able to use your products.
And then one final point that I just wanted to add, which is kind of obvious, but have a look at what other similar organizations are doing. It's amazing how many people don't do this, especially like if you're a small local charity and there's kind of a big national equivalent, like it will be different. But if you're working with like similar beneficiaries or on the same kind of cause, like kind of look and see what kind of words and things that they're using, how their website is structured. And because they have the budgets to do the big constant testing loads and loads of stuff, so a starting point for your testing would be to do what they're doing and see if it works for you. So when I work with organizations on like digital strategy, digital fundraising, the first thing I do is kind of a bit of an audit of what they're doing, and then also a competitor analysis to see what their competitors are doing and kind of see how they compare. So you don't have to go into like the big audit analysis, but even just looking, just spending like 10 minutes on their website or on their Facebook page or whatever, or seeing what kind of software they might be using, like, externally, you really can gain a lot that you can take back and just copy.
And one thing I'm not crediting myself, someone else mentioned in my previous talk, was a really good way to collect survey results that you can do if you don't have Wi-Fi. It's called JotForm. It's free, as far as I'm aware, and it has both, obviously you can collect it when you have Wi-Fi, but if your Wi-Fi goes, for whatever reason, as long as you have the device, it'll do it offline, keep them, and then when you come back to the office or wherever you have Wi-Fi, they'll be there ready and waiting for you. So you don't have to do the paper things. As long as you have ability to have that device, then you can do that wherever you want, which I thought I'd share as well.
Any questions?
I'm also a team of one, and like a new team of one. So I was wondering, how did you get buy-in for other people to come to your, you know, you said your kind of stand-ups and things were open to anyone. How did you encourage people from other teams to come if they hadn't, or were they already doing that so they were familiar with the process?
I wish they were already doing that. I mean, so it's hit and miss, and it's not always worked for us, if I'm honest. But I think a lot of it was, with Jen, we did some lunch and learns about Agile, about the things that I'm doing, showcasing how it worked, really kind of just talked about it all of the time, probably annoyed the hell out of everyone. But as I started to surface it, it wasn't some weird thing that I was making them come to that they wouldn't understand. It was something that was known within the organization as a potential tool in their belt. Then also made it not very often. They don't come to my stand-ups all of the time. Like that, it's more the reviews that they come to from other teams. So my reviews are once a month. For them, making it as short as possible, make sure I'm telling them exactly what I'm, like highlighting to them exactly what we're covering. So don't just say, oh, it's a review meeting where we'll review progress. Be like, I'm talking about this week, and kind of really selling it. It takes quite a lot of communication to get people into the room, if I'm honest. But also knowing who you can, like your allies are, and getting them to say some of it as well. So like Jen has done a great job. Whilst she's not actually officially an NPC staff member, she is so embedded in our organization that she can really influence people as well, and others as well.
Thank you.
This one here in the front.
Happy to have like group therapy as well at any point.
I'm really interested in the Kanban boards concept. How do you make it so that staff don't see that as yet another task I'm asking them to do, and to try and keep what they're putting up there really short? So it's just a...
Yeah, so I mean, one of the things is really the kind of Kanban board and maybe your stand-ups or reviews should replace other meetings. So ultimately, like, you don't want to be like doubling up. So it's kind of like, oh, let's have our usual team meeting, and then let's also do this, and let's also do this. So it should really be replacing a lot of stuff, because those kind of short, you've got stuff on the board, those short kind of 10, 15 minute stand-ups in the morning can replace the need to have like a lot of those kind of larger team meetings. Generally how a stand-up would work, so you kind of using the board so people can see, it's like, this is what I did yesterday, this is what I'm doing today, these are my blockers. Sometimes those blockers might be, I'm really waiting for feedback from the director on this, or I could really do with like a conversation with the whatever expert in the team to talk about this in a bit more detail. And those kind of bits are where you'd probably kind of then have a separate meeting, or you'll decide like, oh, I'll email the director, or I've got a meeting with them later about something else, so I'll mention it. So it's meant to kind of help move things along. And also with the tickets, kind of, yeah, keeping them quite short, like, but it's completely up to the team how that works best. So some teams actually put loads of detail in there, and they use it as like almost like a live chat as well. So they'll be like commenting, asking questions all on the tickets, whereas others will literally just be like, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, and it'll just be conversations and other stuff is wherever. But it's ultimately with Agile is, as an however you use it, you need to use it in a way that's best for your team. So like trial and error, and then in your retrospectives as a team, kind of have a conversation and be like, you know what, I'm finding this, like, this is too much information. Can we just keep our tickets shorter? Or actually, there's too many emails still happening, so let's put more in the tickets, and let's not send each other emails, or let's use Slack as well or something. So it's about working out how it is for you, but ideally removing some of the meetings.
I'd also say that, like, as the person who's leading the team, blockers are your friend, because although obviously they're not helping work, if you can show them that they, if they identify a problem, you'll go and help them fix it, then they're more likely to want to put stuff into a board.
Or someone else in the team can.
Yeah. If that meeting allows them to say, hey, I'm really struggling with this, and then they can actually do something about it, and you can help facilitate that, then they're absolutely more likely to want to be part of this process because it's helping them.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast and found this content helpful and would like to attend the 2023 Be More Digital Conference, you can purchase tickets through the charitydigital.org.uk website today.
We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.